Good evening. It is Tuesday, January 30th, 2018, and the San Jose Sharks, oy, not a pretty one to come out of the break, but nonetheless, they come out of the break with a 5-2 loss to the defending Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins. We welcome you to this edition of Teal Town After Dark. Of course, this is your live and interactive Sharks post-game show, and we do this all live on the YouTube every game, after every game. So nonetheless, if you want to be part of the show, use the hashtag TealTownUSA. Also, you can ask us questions and also on Twitter at TealTownUSA. Hit us up on the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, and YouTube channel, and we go from there. If nonetheless, you're also checking out the YouTube and on the chat and the app. Boy, it's amazing when an all-star break happens. You know, you just get out of your rhythm, it seems like. Nonetheless, let's say hello to the guy who spells his name the right way, who's still enjoying Christmas on his couch. It's Mr. Eric Landy.
Well, I mean, there is a laundry somewhere, but I don't know. I just decided to do the couch talk because, you know what? Sharks fans, it's time we had a little bit of a couch talk. Little couch talk with the Erics about life without Jumbo.
And how does that make you feel?
It's not great.
Also joining us, his next door neighbor, Chris JWS. Chris, how are you?
The heck I just walk into.
You walked into a 5-2 Sharks loss. That's what you just walked into, unfortunately. Ay, ay, ay. So, as they say, let's talk about that hockey.
Sharks, do we have to?
Well, that's what this whole show is. You know, it is how it is. Sharks definitely got a lot of shots on goal early on in this game, but unfortunately, as it tends to happen, the other team takes advantage of it, and with Melker Carlson and Sidney Crosby off for coincidental minors, Brian Rust takes advantage of some rusty Sharks, gets his fifth goal in the year from Sheahan and Cole at 11:09, gets the lone goal of the period. Sharks outshot the Penguins actually 13-11 in this opening frame. But Landy, what did you take from the first period? I don't know. I just didn't feel they had some chances, but then they kind of went back on their heels.
I thought that they opened the game really well. I felt, you know, that they really brought their skates. They brought their skates with them on the trip, you know, and really opened up well. Had a lot of good shots on goal in that first 10 minutes. And then, yeah, they kind of did sag a little bit for the next, I would say, 10 minutes, and overall, you know, the Penguins go into the second period with a lead, with 1-0 lead, but you don't feel too bad about that period because the shots on goal reflected that the Sharks carried the play. So, you know, I think there was good results. It was kind of a mixed bag, you know, good as far as things that they were doing, but bad because of the score sheet.
All right. Chris, what did you take from the opening frame following the All-Star break?
A lot of back and forth, a lot of defensive miscues on the Sharks' end, and a lot of Matt Murray playing very, very well. He didn't look very rusty to me.
Gotcha. With
Matt Murray did look really well, and you know, kudos for him to come back after what happened with his father, you know, and just passing away and all the travel that he's had to do. I think he was coming back from Thunder Bay this weekend, so. You know, it's tough for him, but he got right back on the saddle and, you know, played a really good game.
Yeah, no, he did. He played an awesome game, and like, our best to him and his family with that loss. Yeah, that was the first period, down 1-0. Sharks started to get things going again. They really dominated the second period with, as Brody would say, two PPGs. At PPG Paints Arena, The first one comes from Brent Birds with a wicked wrister, because we all know he's better with a wrist shot than a slapper. But way to go, NHL, for putting him out there with his weak with his weak slap shot ability. He ties the game at exactly the halfway point of the game. 1-1 the score. Burns, he's slowly but surely coming on with an assist from Donskoy and Mikhail Bodker with an assist? Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. We might have to keep him around a little bit more, guys.
Bodker sighting.
Yes. What did you think from Burnsy with the wicked Wista?
It seems to be the only way that Burns can get anything through the Penguins is with a wrister anyways, because he always, whenever he takes too long to settle the puck or set up the slapper, they always block it. I mean, we saw that tail in the finals 2 years ago, so it pretty much had to be a wrister or nothing at all.
Sorry, Landy, I should have directed that, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think one thing that can't be stated enough is that Timo Meier did a really good job with a net front presence. I felt like he really got in Murray's way and just provided a great screen. And he's really developing quite nicely. I'm really liking him on that power play unit.
Yeah, he looked really good. Slowly but surely, this power play is getting well, and it scored again late in the second period. Logan Couture, his 21st on the season, his 200th NHL goal from Tomáš Hertl and Joe Pavelski at 18:35. Guys, they're going up 2-1 in Pittsburgh, going in the locker room with a 2-1 lead. They looked like they were about to be a great...
But wait, there's more.
But then we had to drop the chalupa to Malkin from Kessel with 5 seconds left in the second period. And just like we always say, those last minute or those early goals in the period will come back to haunt you. And this one was the one that came back to haunt the Sharks. Malkin, his 24th on the season, ties the game at 2-2 just as they are going to step out for intermission. Guys, the Sharks outshot the Penguins 23-10 in that frame. Holy Macarena. But Landy, what a great period just gets suddenly sidetracked off of a lazy play by the defense.
Yeah, I mean, they were saying on the broadcast, kind of faulting Goodrow there, saying, Goodrow needs to be further in the corner. But, to be quite honest, Burns has got the puck there. It's the puck handler's responsibility to figure out where he's going to be moving that puck. You can't be making blindsided back passes. He had 8 seconds to eat the puck up on the walls, take it into the dressing room 2-1. Sharks feel good with a moral victory going into the third period. But instead, the Sharks cough it up with 8 seconds left and tie it, and really deflated the rest of the game for me. Up until that point, they looked like they were really trading blows with Pittsburgh, really controlling it, getting some good mojo, some good vibes going on. And just, lines 1 through 4 really matching Pittsburgh pound for pound until that happened. And once that happened, it just really took the wind out of the Sharks' sails, in my opinion.
Chris, go ahead. I was going to mention.
I'm going to mostly agree, but here's where it gets controversial, because I put a lot of blame on Goodrow for that play, because he's got to be letting Burns know where he's going to be. Now, obviously, I can't hear what's going on the ice. Maybe he did, and Burns just did it wrong anyways. But Burns has to trust his forward behind him, whether he's going to eat it or whatever he's going to do. He has to know where he's going to be. I would think he would not be making that blind throw back over there if he doesn't think he's going to go there. So that, and I understand that some people would say that's, you know, the only play you should be making is to eat it on the boards. 8 seconds, though, is enough time for it to still squirt out if it happens too quickly. So I would say that could be entirely Burns' fault. That could be almost entirely Goodrow's fault. We really don't know because we don't know what was actually being yelled on the ice at the time. That's all I'm saying. I've been called a homer for this. I have no idea how that makes me a homer one way or the other. The intellectual conversation on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, let's just break it down because, I mean, do we think that it's actually the puck handler's responsibility to know where the puck is going to be funneled to? Or are we really chastising for defensive awareness, defensive positioning with that pass? I would really put the onus on the person with the puck, right? Because the person with the puck has to know or has to at least have a good sense of where that puck is going to go and who's going to be there. Now, if it was a blown assignment on Goodrow, okay, sure, bad on him. But we just don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying is Burns is, you know, Burns can't know where Goodrow is going to be, and he has to make his decision based on where Goodrow is going to be. So I'm saying either one, that was not communicated, or he ignored the communication. Either way, though, you know, I'm just saying it's not as simple as Burns just blindly threw a puck up there. If he thought Goodrow was going to be there and Goodrow was going there, then sure, but definitively know who was truly at fault there, whether it was Goodrow not following through what he should have done, not communicating it, or if Burns just kind of did whatever he felt like doing. That's all I'm saying. I'm not definitively placing blame on anyone. I'm saying combination of both, because you don't make that play with one person or the other. That's a two-man deal. Yeah. Whether it's him manning up by the net waiting while Burns buries it, so there is no sudden, you know, pass straight to the middle of the ice, or it's him going to the corner and tying the puck up there after Burns takes the heat of the first guy coming in. So that's all I'm saying.
And I'm looking at the goal right now, and I'm seeing that Burns has a clear path, clear outlet to Dylan. All he has to do is make a quick backhand forward pass to Dylan. Dylan's right there. He's in a position to start skating the puck out of the zone, or you do the high risk, high percentage play where you drop it behind you and you let Goodrow try and fish it out. I mean, to me, guys, this is just lackadaisical defense by Burns here, mm-hmm. and this is kind of emblematic of the larger issues that he's having, where it's, you know, he's either going to be really good on that offensive side of the game, or he's going to be really a liability on the defensive side.
This was definitely a case of the Burns giveth, Burns taketh away ratio being a very unfavorable one tonight. And again, I'm not trying to defend Burns as much as point out that it's not as simple as Burns turned it over or Burns didn't turn it over. There are other people involved in the play, and it's a good question why he thought that was the best play. And it could be lackadaisical. It could be a miscommunication. I'm just saying, we don't know for sure exactly what happened there. And I'm sure DeBoer knows, and I'm sure, well, Gen X is talking crap about his defensive system. So I'm sure DeBoer will do nothing about it.
Yeah. No, then that's one of the things I was going to mention before we go into the chat with this is there's a communication thing. It's kind of like, I remember a playoff game, Sharks and Red Wings in 94, where Oselinch and Urbe didn't communicate with each other, even though they could talk three languages with each other, but didn't communicate. And they both got crossed up and led to a quick goal, and that changed the game a little bit for the Sharks. Fortunately, they were able to come back in that game. However, for tonight, it changed this whole game dramatically, because the Sharks literally were dominating the Penguins, and then the Penguins get on the board right away. You have to have better communication out there. I don't care. I mean, we hear that yip, 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 or the, you know, whoop, whoop, you know, whatever Burnsy does out there, you can hear that very much so. So they got to get on the same page, and that's something that they have to get in there.
I'd be more inclined to throw more of the blame on Burns if we hadn't seen so much of this for the last month or so of bad communication on defense and missed assignments. Like, I, you know, if they were playing much better together, I would be more inclined to say, yeah, Burns probably screwed that up. That's also part of my reasoning is that this lately, I mean, that first goal was a missed assignment. I don't recall who it was. It was Tierney or someone. It was one of the younger
LeBanc.
Guys.
It was LeBanc that yeah. didn't pick up. Was it Rust coming in? So, I mean, yeah,
exactly.
It's unfortunate because, like I said before, the Sharks system looked like it really was containing Malkin, Kessel, and Crosby, and it looked like they were able to match the depth pretty well. Not saying that they were, you know, winning every battle, the talent battle, every shift, but I'm just saying that, you know, that the system really did compensate for the lack of Jumbo not being there. And I mean, if the Sharks are going to have any kind of success post Thornton, they're going to have to really figure out if they've got a superstar in the making in the system, or in the players that they have on the ice right now, or if it's going to be like a scoring by committee, you know, a defensive system that you can get away with not having as much talent.
Yeah. Gentlemen, you don't have enough talent to win on talent alone, as they would say.
That's a good expression.
Yeah, just quote from Herb Brooks. St. Owen in the chat, Burns shouldn't be making any pass towards the net with 5 seconds left. Yeah, I would
think that wasn't towards the net, though. It was towards the corner.
Well, it was behind the net, I think, is what they were trying to. That's okay. Just like playing the puck back to your point, offensive zone with one yeah. minute left in a game. You don't do it. You olay to a system. This is from Gen X. You olay to a system. Burns reads the play in front of him, has to trust his partners or forwards to be in the position to reverse play. I made clearing a puck from the zone. Yeah, you got to be absolutely sure on that. So that's interesting. And I like to see how we're already replacing PDP on this.
Oh, yeah, no, the torches are out. It's a 3-game losing streak, don't you know? Well, I mean, it's time to burn it all down.
Well, the thing is that we mentioned this before. Because it's so close, in the West right now, I mean, a 3-game losing streak can take you from second to fifth in the Pacific in no time. And when we get to the wraparound, it'll be quite interesting to see where everything is at that point. So let's move on. But first, let's say hello to everybody who watched Brody and Curtis on Post Game Live, or as I should say, Batman and Robin, as they were shown on as our first screen this evening. You're welcome, Brody, because I know you're watching. Thank you very much. If you are watching, if you haven't done already, make sure you hit that subscribe button down below. Make sure you hit up Tealtown USA for all your Sharks podcast goodies. Pucknologist came out late last night, so check that out. So we move on to the third period as Gen X is suggesting Kevin Constantine come back. Oh, God. Third period now, this was all Penguins. Penguins shut it down. Malkin, his 25th from Hornquist at 6:01 of the third period, makes it 3-2. Brian Rust, getting a little more rusty on the Sharks. His 6th of the year from Kuhnhackl and Letang makes it 4-2 at 13:58. And then Evgeny Malkin with an open net. Technically, Burns was there to try to play goalie, but no luck whatsoever. He completes the hat trick from Rust and Crosby at 18:47. This time, the Penguins went into shutdown mode, outshooting the Sharks 10-6. So, nonetheless, it goes down as a 5-2 Sharks loss. Guys, what did you think of Martin Jones on his return tonight from injury in his first start since January 18th? Landy?
Physically, I thought that he was there. You know, I thought that he was able to move cross crease okay. But mentally, that giveaway in the third period was just, it was not characteristic of him. I mean, I know he's not a great puck handler in the first place, but that was just inexplicable, inexcusable, to be quite honest. To literally lay it on a Penguins tape and then, you know, near the back of his net. I mean, the other thing that I was looking at was some of his reads were okay, but, you know, it seemed like his reactions maybe just were a touch off. The first two periods looked great. That third period, though, did not look good at all.
Chris, what did you think of Jones?
Aside from that one turnover, I actually liked how he played for the most part. I mean, I don't think any other goal tonight really could have been blamed on him, because it was a lot of turnover here, bad defense there. I think Cam said it best, easiest hat trick of Malkin's career, because, you know, that's and one all alone against the goalie. Like, it was, I think he did the best he could and didn't see him like give away any softies. Other than that one turnover, but that's really not much on how he handles the puck. He just can't do that. That's a play you should never be making, period. That's not really a routine play, though.
Yeah. So overall tonight, the Sharks lose 5-2. Shots on goal, they outshot the Penguins 42-31. Faceoffs, obviously, Crosby cheated, of course. You know, like Tor always says, 59-41 in the faceoff circle. Sharks, however, went 2-for-5 on the power play, so it is silent with the power play drum from AJ tonight. Hits the Penguins out, hit the Sharks by a 2-to-1 ratio. Penguins nearly doubled up on the block shots, and the Penguins had two more giveaways than the Sharks did. Overall, on the scoring sheet, Burns with a goal, Bodker with an assist, Hurdle with an assist, Couture with a power play goal, Pavelski also with an assist. All those were on the power play. Joner made 26 of 30 saves in the night. Brian Rust, two goals and assists for the Penguins. Malkin has his hat trick. Letang, Cole, Sidney Crosby, Kessel, Hornquist, all with assists, as Murray made 40 saves on 42 shots. The Sharks are now in a three-game losing streak, and they still do hang on to the second spot in the Pacific Division.
It really shouldn't be missed in this, though, that they won the special teams battle pretty decisively, which is definitely a good thing, but it's just it was the 5-on-5 stuff, or the turnovers, that killed them 5-on-5, because they shut out the Pittsburgh power play, which is near the top. They scored 2 of 5 there, so not all bad news.
No, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, they shut them down out here too, about a week ago, right?
I believe so. Yeah, I think so, at the time they were near the top as well, and I don't believe they scored at all on them.
So kudos, yeah. So kudos to the special teams. I mean, you got to give them that.
Steve Spot hero. No.
let's not get crazy. But anything else to add, Mr. Landy, on from tonight's game?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that this kind of goes to show you that the Sharks can compete without Jumbo. You know, the Sharks have a lot of depth. However, when you get down, you know, two goals, I mean, maybe there's not enough talent here to really, you know, get that puck in the back of the net when it really is counting on it. So, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it's quite a thought that could be the case, but we kind of, you know, it just seems to me like that we've noticed this since the beginning of the year when we were having trouble scoring 5-on-5. Yes, the power play has been great. You know, Steve Spott's, I would say, saved his spot on the coaching staff. Now you got to reel back the defense back in. Now, you know, it's just, now it's just like, okay, what are we going to do now? And the thing is with Outro Thornton, what are we going to do now? Well, that remains to be seen. The lines were jungling all over the place, and they'll eventually figure themselves out. But, you know, without Joe Thornton, you know, it's going to be tough. But, you know, with Joe Thornton not being around, all I could say is, you know, if he's bored, you know, sitting around, I mean, he can always join us, right, guys? Oh, yeah.
Hey, Joe. What's up, man? You really should come on the show, yeah? We got cool tunes, good time, we got laundry. Yeah. Speaking of laundry, Eric might have a thing or two to say to you. That's you.
Landy, that's you.
What am I saying?
You're pleading for Joe to come on. Damn it, dude, you're ruining the bit.
Joe, please, we need you here on the couches. We need you to speak your wisdom. Really, get the community back into this team.
Eric, you get to go too. Damn it, guys. Good coordination.
Hey, I'm just trying to get the mood a little bit better, boys. All I'm saying is, come on, Joe. You're not a fool. You should be with us. We're going to have a good time. Because we always want to have a good time, right? And what better way to talk Sharks hockey than be with us? We could dance. We could sing. We could laugh. We could talk about facial hair. We could talk about other hairs, but we rather not do that too much on the show.
Roosters as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great. That was good execution on our part.
Thank you. All right. Lights back on. Okay.
Yeah, Brody, you win. Yours is better.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever. We tried. We're more fun than Brody anyway.
A for effort.
Yes, that's right. All right. With that, let's go around the NHL wraparound. Right. Yeah. See, Jumbo? See what we did there? Yeah. Yeah, bud. Yeah.
I'm sure he's watching right now. I guarantee it. He's in the chat probably.
Yes, with all 19 people watching. Y'all are 5 seconds of this one getting you for Conrad and Richmond.
Blame these guys. They let hang, man. and I checked the acceptable use policy on this one.
Oh yeah? We're good?
We're good. They just might monetize the video. So if you see advertising display in this video, we're rich off the Audible money. Okay. We don't need that.
All about that Audible money.
But I will say this, Kevin Lacy bang on. Now batting right fielder, number 16, Josh Reddick. Yes, absolutely. So let's do the NHL wraparound as we have games many are in progress and some are final. We'll do the ones that are final first. Not a good result for the Sharks here in Beantown. The Ducks go into TD Garden and beat the Bruins 3-1. Silverberg, Henrique twice get the goals for the Ducks as Spooner gets the lone goal late for the Bruins. Doesn't matter. The Ducks now are at 59 points on the campaign. In Buffalo loses once again to the Devils 3-1. Woodhull, Palmieri with the goals for the Devils. McCabe with the lone goal for the Sabres. In Brooklyn, for now, the soon-to-be splitting time between Brooklyn and Nassau Islanders lose to the Panthers 4-1 as Harry Sateri, former Shark goaltender, gets the win for the Panthers. Yes, Harry Sateri. I never thought I'd hear that name again. Matheson, Dadonov, Yandel, and Huberdeau goals for the Panthers. Pelech with the goal for the Fish Sticks. We already know about the Sharks and Penguins in Carolina. The Sharks Super Puck 52 opponent on Sunday. They pull out a win over the Ottawa Senators 2-1. Sebastian Aho and Victor Rask with the goals. Rask getting the game-winning goal on the power play as Peugeot gets the goal in the late in the second period for the Sens. In Columbus, the battle of the 2000 expansion squads, the Wild win in a shootout 3-2 over the Neon Buggers. Zucker,
are you saying they won in a wild one?
They won in a wild one. It was wild and crazy.
Zucker, yuck, yuck, yuck.
Zucker with his 20th on the year. Coyle, his 5th. That's right. Jason Zucker has twice as many goals as Joe Pavelski. Savard and Panarin with goals for the Jackets as Sergei Bobrovsky loses this one in the shootout. Games that are currently in progress, and there are a plenty. The Blues lead 2-0 over the Montreal Canadiens. Barbashev and Berglund with goals for the Blue Notes as they are late in the third period in Scott Trade Center. In Nashville, the Predators are down 2-1 to the Blackhawks with under 6 minutes to go as Kampf and Hinostroza, who are your goal scorers for the Blackhawks. Kyle Turris with his 9th on the year. In Winnipeg, the Jets are up 3-1 on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Oh my. Liney with the power play goal. Kyle Connor and Brian Little each have a goal. Don't call him Michael Pekka. His first of the year for the Lightning. At the end of the second period, it is Los Angeles 2, Dallas nothing. Ledoux and Doughty with the goals for the Kings. And also in the second period, late here, Calgary 1, Golden Knights 1. You know that this means it's, they're going to go into an overtime and a shootout, which will not help the Sharks whatsoever.
Yeah, that's got 3-point game written all over it.
Yeah, Riley Smith with his 13th on the year for the Vegas Golden Knights. Sam Bennett tied it up for Calgary at 6:02 the second period. In Vancouver, the Canucks are up 1-0 over the Colorado Avalanche as Bo Horvat, Rocket's favorite.
Thank you.
No. No.
Chris has made his triumphant return with the mute button.
Chris, you ignorant slut.
I'm playing Tony Reale up in this one.
Oh, gosh. No, around the horn is the Pecknologist. Anywho, that being said, the standings look like this, which are pretty much the same as the standings that we saw on Thursday before we went on hiatus for the All-Star break. Winnipeg is at 66, Nashville at 65, St. Louis 63 in Central. In the Pacific, Anaheim, for now, has taken over the number 3 spot in the Pacific at 59 points. The Sharks, however, have 2 games in hand on the Ducks. However, a Calgary point of any sort will tie the Sharks. If they get the win, the Sharks will be out of the playoff race in the Pacific.
No, because they hold the tiebreaker with Anaheim because they've played less games.
Games in hand.
So I'm sorry. Anaheim would drop out. San Jose would go to number 3.
Yes.
Apologies. Thank you for that, Landy. Thank you. Dallas has the first wild card at 60. Minnesota is at 59. Calgary right now at the moment is at 58. Colorado's at 57. LA has 57 points. With the win, they will go to 59 and would have more
Rose.
Thank you. Then either Anaheim or San Jose. So if the Kings win, they would jump back. They would leapfrog over maybe 2 teams. So Anaheim might be out. San Jose might be out, depending on how this night turns out. Chicago is at 53. Edmonton at 47. Vancouver at 44. The Desert Dogs deserted at 33. So that is your up-to-date in the West. In the East, the Pittsburgh win puts them at 59 points. They're 4 back of Washington. Funny how Washington and Pittsburgh were on the outside looking in earlier in this year, and now they are on top of the Eastern Conference. or I'm sorry, the Metro Division. My apologies. Atlantic Division wise, the Tampa Bay Maple Bolts are at 71. The Boston Bruins are at 66. The Toronto Bay Lightning Leafs are at 61. The Blue Jackets are at 58, holding on the first wild card spot. Philly at 56, holding on the second wild card spot, with the Rangers and Islanders just a point back, and the Hurricanes at 54. So that is your up to date in the playoff race. But guys, man, oh man, I mean, the Sharks could drop two spots depending on the outcome of tonight's actions.
Well, we all know I'm very worried about how we end the month of January in the standings. Indeed.
No, I mean,
we're 1 point. We might be 1 point out of the playoff spot at the end of January. I'm being a little bit flippant, but
things are going to change.
Things are going to go up and down. I mean, the trend is not good right now for the Sharks, but
right. Yeah. And I think that's what we're kind of wondering. Okay, where is the ship going to go south, or are we going to tread water, or are we going to, you know, be better than we expect? I mean, I don't know. And right now, I mean, there's going to be a good stretch of games here on the road, a good stretch that it's really going to tell us what the Sharks team is made of.
Honestly, at this point, it's probably good if they, you know, if they fall apart, because at least we know which direction they're going there. But what?
Gen X with a couple of comments there. The New York bipolanders, as they will be splitting time between Brooklyn and Nassau starting next season. And it's Vinny Badaboom Hinestrosa.
Good.
Sorry, go ahead.
But I was just saying that right now, I mean, they very well probably do need to do some rebuilding without Jumbo, and it's not the worst. I love the sexy Landy look we're getting right now, you know.
Cue the music back up now.
Yep. Yeah, I know. We need a little Barry White for this one.
Yep.
Ooh, yeah. But no, seriously though, and also I'm seeing comments in the chat about how important it is to bring back Paul Martin. Okay, guys, the Paul Martin thing is pretty much done at this point. And if you think Paul Martin's the fix for this defense, we are screwed. Like, we are seriously screwed if Paul Martin's your answer right now. No disrespect to him. He had a couple good years here, but it's done. It's time to move on.
That tells you one thing and one thing only, that if Paul Martin's our best option currently in the San Jose Barracuda, there are some issues. For that matter, if somebody goes down forward-wise, I mean, outside Rudolph's Balsers, who else are we going to bring up for the Barracuda? I mean, seriously.
Crickets.
I mean, there's a reason why you're not going to see anybody trade at the trade deadline. As much as we want to say, oh, yeah, we're going to send Yanni Canson. Oh, we're going to get rid of Joel Ward. You can't afford to. Welcome to the reality is that this team is stuck. They can't afford to train anybody right now unless somebody, you know, unless DW catches somebody sleeping when making a trade. We're looking at you, Pittsburgh, for giving us two picks for Douglas Murray, and looking at the Rangers at you for giving us two picks for Ryan Clough.
Keep in mind, though, again, that we're talking about what's at the top of the pipeline, and we were talking about how bare the top of the pipeline was 2 or 3 years ago. Suddenly, there was a bunch at the top of the pipeline, and then most of it's up with us now. But that can change in a few years, and really, they're going to have to probably have a few bad years. They're never going to tear it to the screws, but they're going to have a couple bad years again to maybe restock the cupboard some more.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few prospects that we own rights to in the CHL, and then there's a lot actually of prospects that are in college hockey right now. So, I mean, there are some decent prospects like further out in the pipeline, but we're talking like 3 to 4 years out versus the 1 to 2 year out players. I mean, the 1 to 2 year out players were Kevin LeBanc, were Timo Meier. I think Jeremy Waugh took a step back due to injury. Yeah. Mark Chartier also took a step back due to injury. Daniel Regan is on the team now, but not getting the chance. You know, there's Philip Sandberg, but I don't think that they ever really envisioned him being more than an AHL kind of player. Maybe if he showed some offensive acumen, he might get a call up, but not really too much there. I mean, you know, right now the 1 to 2 year prospect window is been stripped. You know, it's been stripped.
Oh, big time.
And Gen X making a lot of good points in the chat that I, you know, very correct here, saying it's almost like the Sharks haven't drafted well or managed their assets well. I think there's definitely some truth in that. And then if the top of the pipeline over the last 5 years is in the NHL and you're looking for help, how top were they? This is also very true. I mean, I think they, you know, they sacrificed a lot of that pipeline over the years as well earlier than that to try and preserve that one group's run. And They almost got a cup out of it, but not quite. And yeah, I it's, you know, it's a difficult, in Doug Wilson's defense, you know, as much as, you know, I'll get crapped on for defending him, that is a hard decision to make as to when to pull the plug on a group that's had a lot of success. That it's, you know, it's easy to say do it early, but it's if you do it too early, you're probably out of a job as a GM.
Right. And I mean, Rob Iman is asking, do we trade Hanson, Ward, or Pavs for some AHL prospects? I mean, look, Hanson, you're not going to get much for. I mean, that was just a silly trade by Doug Wilson. You know, that was another player. I mean, of course, you know, we all know that was about
Goldobin dump.
Yeah. Well, we all know that Goldobin has had his issues, you know, and he's got some maturing to do. But there's no denying there's a lot of skill there. You know, that was kind of a painful one to go.
Elaney, I should let you go. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and they're just going to say, you know, so Hanson, that was definitely a bust. Ward, I mean, who would want Ward in a league that's going to quicker, stronger, and younger? Ward is not those things.
I mean, yeah, he gets the occasional timely goal, so we can call him clutch.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, even though he's invisible for the other 15 to 20 games between. But
I mean, granted, he will be remembered for scoring the greatest goal in Sharks history, sending the Sharks to the conference or to the Stanley Cup final. But there's a reason why Justin Williams is no longer on a playoff contender right now. I mean, yeah, he's Mr. Game 7, but he is on the older run of sorts with Carolina.
And believe it or not, all those plays you make between those big goals also matter as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Kevin Lacey saying, I'll take Buddy Robinson for Yannick Hanson. I mean,
at this point, I'll take a cup of Starbucks for Yannick Hanson.
I mean, yeah, it's, I mean, I that one's probably the biggest. That might be one of the biggest busts for Doug Wilson, because you gave up a highly touted prospect to get a guy who you thought would be the savior. And
how highly touted really was he, though, if he only was able to fetch Yannick Hanson?
Well, I mean, I think, though, that there were his trade value was completely shot by the point that they traded him for Hanson. So, yes, he wasn't a world beater prospect at that time. However, he did have, you know, more skill there. And I think another one, though, that we have to look at is Mirko Mueller. I think that one was kind of an interesting trade as well, both because of what Mirko represented, but also that was a trade chip that they only got a second round pick out of, which is, you know, in retrospect, that seems a little low for how New Jersey's deploying him right now. So, I mean, maybe, you know, Doug Wilson got a little fleeced there. And, you know, I still criticize that draft position where they drafted him.
And remember, they traded up for him.
Right. They traded up for him. And there's definitely been a lot of mismanagement in that, you know, in their drafting and just in their asset management right now. And, I mean, looking at Mirko Mueller, Anthony Mantha was picked by Detroit. That looks like a great pick up now. I mean, Hunter Shinkarik, kind of an interesting player. Shea Theodore. I mean, that wouldn't it be great to have Shea Theodore right now? Andre Burakovsky was picked after Mirko Mueller. I mean, just Ryan Hartman from Chicago. I mean, there are some really, really good players, and you know, the Sharks don't really have anything to show for that draft year.
Well, Dr. Jackal saying in the chat, Mueller's mismanaging San Jose, full stop. I think there's some truth to that in the sense that they played him. They played him too early. They didn't develop him well. And honestly, I wouldn't say they got fleeced, because at least when I'm looking, I haven't watched him much in New Jersey, but is not, you know, the numbers I'm looking at don't look like anything particularly interesting or impressive. He's played 14 games. He has 4 points.
And, no, but I mean, just where he's deployed as, though. He's deployed as a top four forward. Our top four defensemen, you know, and you only get a second round pick out of that. I don't know. That seems a little low to me.
Well, I mean, that's for now. Who knows where he'll be? Another. I mean, if he's able to eat those kind of minutes year in and year out, then maybe you're right. But for a couple games of a season, I think that's a little bit premature.
Yeah, I mean, there really hasn't been much outs after Goldobin in the 2014 draft that's made a big impact, maybe outside Braden Point, who went 79th overall. You know, 7 picks after Alex Schoenborn was selected by San Jose. I mean, that's pretty much the only all-star coming out of the 2014 draft after Goldobin was selected. So, I mean, it's a tough call. And
James Abel correctly saying, what a depressing night. Yep. Yeah.
It doesn't help now that the Kings now have a lead on the Dallas Stars. The Flames now have a 2-1 lead on the Golden Knights after two periods, and Vancouver leads 2-0 over Colorado.
Right. So I mean, just kind of wanting to wrap this up here wrap up the conversation in and around the draft picks and stuff. I think the reason why we're kind of going here, and the reason why we do go to this place a lot in this show, is because this is what life after Thornton is, right? This is how you get your next, you know, set of superstar players. This is how you develop these players, and what you get out of them and what you get out of your assets is how the team is successful. And right now, I mean, somebody put in there that maybe DW should be pushed upstairs to, you know, the executive vice president or VP of hockey ops. Or, yeah. And have somebody else. I mean, Joe Will or maybe Ricci or, you know, somebody like that. I have no idea, but maybe it is time to move DW.
Honestly, it's probably time to get a fresh voice in the room if you're doing that. But yeah. I mean, that might be the way they, if they do decide to move him aside, it might be in the form of promotion where it's, oh, you have more, you supervise more people, but you aren't as, you know, hands-on anymore.
You're director of hockey ops, but the GM is going to make the decisions
I mean, yeah, who knows?
And really clean house in the scouting department too. I think
let's be honest here, it's overdue. And if, you know, I hate to get on my Sommer drum, but as much as he's gotten these guys up to the NHL as quickly as they can with Meyer, Sorensen, O'Regan, LeBanc, etc., this is where you find those talented players that you currently have in your system right now in the Barracuda and come up with it. And right now we're saying Paul Martin is probably your best defensive available to the Barracuda from the Barracuda. That's not good.
Yeah. In chat, Gen X is saying, why placate him? Just effing fire him. Well, I'm not advocating for placating him. I'm just saying how I could see the Sharks doing that, because they don't seem to like to do the they don't seem to like to straight up fire people very often. I mean, even Todd McClellan, it was a mutual departure or whatever it was, you know, just being real here about how I could see Doug Wilson being moved out of that spot, knowing what we know about how the Sharks operate. And I'm not going to say they never fire people, but they definitely don't seem to be aggressive in that sense. Yeah,
just very loyal.
I'm not saying how it should be. I'm saying how it is, not how it should be.
Right. No, and very loyal, right? I mean, Jumbo got a outrageous deal for a year, and just how much money was laid into that contract.
Mm-hmm.
Rob Iman with a great one. Botner is too close to DW. I totally agree.
I mean, that one-year deal with Joe Thornton, though, I mean, that's much ado about nothing either way, because, I mean, it's basically cap space that was available or not. I mean, who are they going to sign with that space anyways, and it's over after 1 year? If he did a multi-year deal, I would hear you, but it's 1 year. It's basically just spending money for 1 year that they were probably not going to spend elsewhere.
And, you know, the thing is just that, you know, well, like Gen X says, Flavel might disagree on that. But they don't fire.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying they never fire people. I'm just saying if you're expecting them to suddenly get fire happy after that one time, I would say you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chris.
Good.
Oh no, I was just saying I agree with Chris.
Oh, okay.
No, I agree. Good. It's always good when someone agrees with me.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting, and with the pressure, and I hate to use this, and it's because of marketing purposes, because of the All-Star game, coming next year, you're going to be the importance of fielding a good team and fielding a team that will have multiple All-Stars is paramount.
Possible.
Well, I mean, it's important.
If you're expecting multiple All-Stars next year, you're probably dreaming. Like Burns and who else?
Maybe Mike Couture.
Sure.
Yeah. Maybe. Even that, though, I mean.
Hurdle?
Yeah. I'm not saying there's nobody that can, but it would take one of those guys having a great year on a team that overall is going to be struggling to be in games next year, I think, unless something drastic changes. You know, guys from, the guys who make the All-Star game are usually the guys off the winning teams.
Yeah,
right.
Or the ones who have multiple All-Stars.
Right.
I mean, somebody's asking about Tavares, and I, at this point, I don't even know if Tavares is going to be out of Long Island. I mean, it's either he's in or he's out, he's in or he's out. We have no idea what's going on there. And if you're placing all your bets on just Tavares, I mean, that's really short-sighted because, let's face it, California tax, not great.
And for that matter, what the thing is, if Patty saw this coming and bounced out of San Jose to go to Toronto, where there's a possibility he could still win a cup, why would John Tavares want to come over here? And I hate to use Patty as an example, but he saw a better situation in Toronto.
But it, devil's advocate there. I mean, we're comparing Patty with John Tavares. I mean, John Tavares is a franchise-altering player. Patty is a supplemental piece at this point.
Well, also, you're forgetting the part where there's no way Marlowe is going to get that good of a deal here or probably almost anywhere else. Like, I'm not saying the possibility of winning wasn't part of his motivation, but if the Sharks offer that same exact money to counter it, which would have been a terrible idea, but if they had, I would say there's a pretty dang good chance he's still here. Like, even if they came in that ballpark, even if they had like half a million less per year, he would probably still be here. I could be completely wrong about this. Obviously, I'm speculating, but I'm just saying I don't think he went there solely because of the chance to win. I think it's in part because no one else is going to offer him that good of a deal. I don't blame him for that. Get your money. Get paid.
Sure. I get that. And I understand that. And Marlo getting paid. Totally fine by me. My point is that when you look at the situation and the rosters, not just with the Sharks but also with the Barracuda, and see what you have, are the Sharks one Tavares away from going to a cup final again? No.
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, I wouldn't say from going to the cup final, but he could only breathe some Sharp life into how relevant they potentially are, because exactly. what, you know, adding a top liner to a team that is pretty set on defense, and Martin Jones, if he, you know, can stay, keep his head on straight, is a decent goalie. They could pretty well quickly jump back to relevance. It'd be, again, a question of what's coming up the pipeline. Still nothing. Can they get over the top? Who knows? But I would say a top liner would definitely make them right in the playoff picture. I don't know about the cup, but definitely in the playoff picture.
Yeah, I totally agree with Chris. I mean, I think getting Tavares is definitely a franchise altering kind of move there. But again, I mean, that this is putting all one eggs into a single basket, and that basket might not even be, you know, woven correctly, because he might not even be coming here.
And so realize that 15 to 20 other team, you know, fans of teams are having this exact same conversation about how Tavares can be the savior of their franchise. So right. He's going to have his choice of every schlub team in the entire league. And I don't think it'll be us, just realistically, because, you know, that's life as a Sharks fan.
And if
we don't have these things,
I mean, so what are the realistic options now? I think we start looking at those bottom feeder teams where we can try and pry some talent. You know, go talk to Ottawa about Mark Stone. Go talk to Montreal about Max Pacioretty. You know, these are, you know, getting a couple of those players that will help out for now and for the long run. You know, think about trading Pavs, you know, straight up to Montreal. Be like, hey, you need a center? Pavs play center.
He doesn't speak French, though.
Well, I mean,
and he's American. American.
But Max is American, and he's a captain of Montreal.
Oh, you would not believe how angry that makes some fans.
No, I know.
That's how a whole is. Different. Let's not go down the rabbit hole of the racism of Montreal fans. That's their special brand there. oh, don't get me started.
Right, but I mean that's. That's what the Sharks are going to have to look at.
Yeah.
You know? Also, I think they should look at the Vegas model, so to speak, because Vegas has made the case for something I've been saying for years, is value players, guys that are, you know, they aren't sexy, but if you get a good handful of those value players, they can boost your team a lot. And I think Vegas is really making the case for that idea that you don't necessarily have to have tons of top line talent. If you have, you know, if you have four lines that can roll, even if they aren't going to blow you away, you can wear other teams down. And I think that is definitely a lesson. I think a lot of teams are going to take notice in the next couple of years.
Well, I guess the ghost of Alex Martinet is here. Alex.
do we have to have intro music or like, you know, bow, 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 bow.
Just drop the bass.
Alex, what's up, bud?
Alex Martina out of nowhere.
I know, with the band hammer. Pretty good. I didn't watch the game tonight. Lucky. I had a feeling it was going to be tonight's result. Maybe not a hat trick from Elkin, but that was kind of what I thought going in. I was kind of listening to your conversation, just wanted to jump in. I just don't think Martin Jones is... play. I mean, I don't think you really can depend on him right now. I would like to see Dell get some more time against top tier teams to see what he actually is.
I think, I mean, just to play devil's advocate for a second there on Dell, while he's been really, really good, he was showing some fatigue there. Definitely the last game. Yeah, you know, giving up five goals and just not being as sharp as we've seen him before. So, I thought
last game, the game before All-Star game or All-Star week, Troy Gutschman should have started because I thought Dell was just fatigued for the third period. That's what cost us that game.
Yeah, no, I totally agree there. Well, I mean, Eric, I mean, we're hitting that hour mark. So.
We are hitting the hour mark right now. So, why don't we go ahead and wrap it up? As what the heck was that?
I have no idea.
I don't want to know. All right. with that, if you've missed anything or you want to watch us do this whole show again, you can catch us everywhere. But of course, check us out on TL10USA.com or your favorite podcatcher, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, YouTube, you name it, we have it. If there's something we're missing, let us know. By all means, let us know. We'll be back with you following the Sharks and Red Wings. I know it sounds weird to say that this is the first meeting of the year between the Sharks and the Red Wings from the Pizza Box.
Also my boss's favorite team, so I'm going to be heckling him on IM tomorrow all day at work.
Nice.
I really hope they win. This one means a lot to me personally. My introduction, my last company where I worked with him, I get an email just out of the blue on like my first couple days that says, "Sharks suck. Welcome to the team."
Always good to have a nice boss like that. But yeah, his team sucks too. But his arena is pretty nice. So
it's made out of pizzas or something. Yeah.
Or well, it would actually be pizza. So, you know. So final thoughts, we'll start with you, Mr. Martinez, since you just jumped in, and tell us where people can find you.
I won't talk much about the game, but I do hope this is not a rebuild year or start of the rebuild for the Sharks. I don't think it's quite that quite extreme. Plenty of great depth in the Barracuda that I hope comes up soon. But Sharks do have a noticeable, you know, cap where they can sign someone in the free agency. There's plenty of options they can do. I don't think it's quite as doomy as people want to make it out to be. Anyways, you can find me on Twitter at Al Martinet. Do a bunch of video game reviews over there. And yeah.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Martinet. Mr. Landy, your final thoughts on where the people can find you online.
Well, I guess from the couch, the thoughts from the couch.
That's from the couch. Yes.
You know, I think it's just, this is kind of going to be one of those growing pains without Jumbo. I mean, and really it's going to test whether or not Logan is ready for first line duty. It's going to test whether or not, you know, Hurdle is ready for prime time in the center. And Pavelski shifting back to center. And, you know, if the stars align and really it's time for Logan to take up the mantle of being leader of this team, then, you know what, then the Sharks could go places. But, you know, if he's not up to snuff, if he's not up to task, then, you know what, it's not going to be pretty this year. And that's the thoughts from the couch. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Eric Landy, Facebook, Instagram, you know, all the social media sites. It's just my first name and my last name.
You said growing pains?
Yes. Show me that smile. Don't waste
another minute on your client. Trying to get us demonetized. we got the Audible money.
Yes, all that Audible.
What, the 0.5 cents?
It was 0.6, sir.
Was it 0.6? Was it really?
I believe it was just straight zero. But anyways, my final thoughts on this is, remember how little any of us know, because a couple years ago we said the Sharks were dead and buried. Then they went to the finals the next year. All the Oilers fans up north, like, oh, dynasty forever. You know, okay, how many, you know, what's McDavid going to do with the sixth ring? Is he going to put it on his pinky on the other hand? Is he going to put it on his thumb? Is he going to put two on the thumb on one hand? So remember, we don't know crap about crap, which is a slight exaggeration. But while we get down, things can turn around awful fast because, yes, a few good moves and a few good changes can change the situation. So yeah, keep your chin up, kid. And you can find me on Twitter at ChrisJWS. I don't know why anyone would follow me. I just tweet snark all day long, literally, if I tweet at all.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that either. I'm Eric Hura. You can always follow me on Twitter and the Instagram at PuckGuy14. Of course, we do this precious little show after every game, so make sure you join us. Of course, if you join us live on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Of course, hit that bell next to it so that way you are notified when we do go on the air, because without you, we have no audience, and with no audience, we'd just be talking to ourselves. So we appreciate everybody coming out and watching us. Tell all your friends, tell all your frenemies while you're at it too. We'll be back with you following the Sharks and Red Wings tomorrow. That's a 5 p.m. start. That'll be on NBC Sports California and along the Sharks Radio Network. And then join us right back here on this YouTube channel for Teal Town After Dark, where we hope we will be celebrating the end of a 3-game winning streak. And if not, we will try not to hit that panic button any further.
The panic button.
Yes. And we're not talking Joe Panic either.
Around here, it'll be the panic horn.
Exactly. Until then, keep it real. Keep it teal. Keep it real teal. We'll see you tomorrow night.